Hello, my name is Liv Gay, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. The global financial crisis has thrown a spotlight on the growing income inequality plaguing many countries. Thomas Piketty has been tracking this growing disparity over recent years and argues for progressive taxation to ease this trend. Research into inequality goes back many years and started with the work of Russian-American economist Simon Kuznets, who identified a natural cycle of economic inequality. Kuznets suggested that as a country develops, inequality increases at first and is then reduced. But the reality has proven to be much more complicated.
Well, you know, until recently, there was a lot of talk about inequality, but relatively little known in terms of facts. You know, the first historical study on inequality was by Kuznets in the 50s, and he found a reduction of inequality within the US and more generally within rich countries during the first half of the 20th century. But then during the second half of the 20th century, what we have found by updating Kuznets' series and by extending them to many countries is that this has been largely reversed during the past 30 years. So typically in the United States, the share of national income going to the top decile is now around 50%, which is the highest level ever observed in American history. And more generally, within rich countries with varying degrees, we have observed a rise of inequality within the past 30 to 40 years. Now, at a global level, the picture is more complicated because at the same time, you have a reduction of inequality between countries and a rise within most countries. So the total trend at the individual level is, of course, a complex one, and this shows that there are convergence and there are divergence forces in the dynamics of inequality. And we need to be very careful about which one dominates, and for very long period, divergence forces can possibly beat convergence forces.
So it's a very mixed picture that you're actually seeing. Does that mean that inequality is more of an advanced country phenomenon rather than a developing country one?
Well, when you have very high growth, you know, when your income is growing 5% per year or even 3% per year, you don't care as much about inequalities than in a stagnant country. So it's not surprising that indeed people are much more concerned about inequality in mature low-growth economies than in high-growth emerging economies. But, you know, at some point, presumably when emerging economies have finished their catch-up process, everybody will be in the same boat, so to speak. So, you know, I think it's important to understand the dynamics of inequality within rich countries, not only because it's interesting for rich countries, but because it's interesting for the entire world. You know, the catch-up process is great, but at some point, it will not, it cannot last forever.
Speaking of the dynamics of inequality, what are usually the causes of inequality, and what are its effects on both the economy but also the people?
I think it's important to realize that the growth of GDP per se does not necessarily lead to the rise of welfare, depending on how it's distributed. In the US, over the past 30 years, almost 70% of aggregate growth went to the top 10%, and 60% went to the top 1%. So, of course, this has huge consequences on the welfare of the other people who don't benefit from growth. So it's important to realize that, you have both convergence and divergent forces. You know, there are forces, in particular the diffusion of knowledge, the diffusion of technological knowledge and technological change, both at the international level and within countries through proper educational institutions. These are very powerful convergence forces in the sense that they allow those who are at the bottom to catch up with people who are higher up, either between countries or within countries. But on the other hand, you also have powerful divergent forces. Typically when some people at the top set their own pay, if you don't put limit on this process, you can see easily how this can diverge. And I think it's important to recognize that both sets of forces are present, and depending on which one dominates, this can have tremendously different consequences for the life of people.
Talking about convergence and divergence, some people would actually argue that inequality is a good thing for the economy and that it creates a sort of healthy competition, which is the motor of all market economies. So what would you respond to that?
Well, I would respond that, you know, this is all a matter of degree. Let's take the example of the US, the largest developed economy. The share of national income going to the top 10% has gone up from about 30-35% in the 70s, and it was there in the 50s, 60s, 70s, to over 50% today. Now, the question is, where will it stop? You know, should it go to 60, 70%, 80%? You know, at some point, you have to look at the numbers and you have to ask yourself, sure, we need some inequality in order to have incentives, rewards. But, you know, when you have 70% of aggregate economic growth going to a small group of the population during three decades in the largest developed economy in the world, you know, it becomes a macroeconomic issue. And I think we need to look at this in a very non-ideological way and take the number seriously. Yes, you need incentives, but, you know, over a certain level, when someone gets a pay raise from $1 million to $2 million or from 5 to 10, you know, what you reward very often is not so much productivity, but rather greed and sometimes actually unproductive behavior, excessive risk-taking. You know, there is a lot of evidence that this has been going on. And again, at the macro level, you don't see higher growth in countries like the US, where inequality has been increasing a lot as compared to continental Europe or Japan. You know, the growth performance of rich countries over the past 30 years is just basically the same.
So what policies can countries with high level of inequality, or not so much, just apply to mitigate its effect on their population and on their macroeconomic policy?
Well, by and large, the main policy is, of course, investment in skills, you know, which is in the long run, the convergence forces in order to reduce inequality is the diffusion of knowledge, the diffusion of human capital. Now, this does not happen just like that. You know, you need proper educational institutions, proper investment in skills, and this requires a lot of money, huge investment, adequate access to education. That's the key. Now, at the very top of the distribution, you have other issues that are going on, which are not really related to the inequality in skills, but rather to the failure of the market and for that matter of the pay determination process at the high end. And here the lesson that we draw by looking at the US and at many other countries is that progressive taxation at the very top is the only way to calm down, you know, the exploding trend at the very top. You know, when you look at the facts, you compare across country, the most convincing explanation for why this huge rise at the top occurred mostly in the US, in the UK, to a lesser extent, is because these are the two countries, particularly the US, which have cut enormously top tax rate between the 60s, 70s, and the 90s, 2000. You know, one has to remember that the US and the UK had top tax rate over 80%, 90% during the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, you know, during half a century. And then suddenly, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s, it was cut to less than 30%. And our conclusion is that this has completely changed the name of the game in terms of pay setting, which is that, you know, when you have a tax rate of 70-80% for very, very large income levels, it means that when you want to extract one more million from your company, or you want to get a pay raise of $1 million from your company, well, everybody knows, you know, your stakeholders, your shareholders, your employees know that 70-80% is going to go straight to the treasury. So that's going to be hard to convince them that you are worth it. And also for you, you have less incentives to convince them because, you know, you're not going to get much. Now, when the tax rate is less than 30%, the name of the game has changed, because it means that, you know, it's really worth trying to convince them and convince people on the right board that you should get this raise. You know, given that nobody really knows what's the marginal product of a CEO or a chief financial advisor in a huge company with tens of thousands of employees, you know, we are not talking about the invisible hand of the market here. We are talking about, you know, the grabbing hand of, you know, human beings who, you know, if you let them set their own pay, will tend to go too far. So there are things that the market does very well, and there are things that the market does not do so well. And I think the pay setting process at the very top is an example of something that the market doesn't do so well. And one way to calm down the process for very, very high level is to have quasi-confiscatory tax rate.
This was Thomas Piketty of Paris School of Economics speaking on the topic of income inequality. To hear more podcasts, log on to www.imf.org/podcasts.